Having made my announcement, I want to beat a political drum in favor of the Poetry Center. Pleased and honored today to be able to present a double reading by two of the most interesting young poets in the Bay Area, David Meltzer and Joanne Kiger. David Meltzer is, I think, one of the liveliest and most inventive writers in the area. He's a poet and a novelist. He lives now in Mill Valley. He's published widely in literary magazines ever since the Beat period, and in a variety of periodicals and poetry anthologies. His books go back to the 1959, Ragas in 59, The Clown in 60, We All Have Something to Say to Each Other, 1962, Balls of Scope, Mother, 64, The Process, 65, Journal of the Birth, 67, The Dark Continent, 67. In addition, he's also written 7 short novels, all of which were published this year. The Agency, The Agent, How Many Blocks in the Pile, Orf, The Martyr, and Lovely. His latest book, Maya Soul Pilot, collection of poems, is expected to appear later this year. Ms. Kiger will read first. She's a young San Francisco poet whose work has appeared in a number of small literary magazines and who has read widely in this area. She's read for the Rhymers Club at the University of California in Berkeley and at the Haight-Ashbury Poets Theater. Her first collection of poems, The Tapestry and the Web, was published in 1965 by the Four Seasons Foundation. Ms. Kiger will be the first poet to read.
I'm going to read some stuff that I've written since this year, 1968. By all means, from this very room, I will fly later. The soft breeze, who is holding on to the thus delineated position, will then spring from the forehead. To this body of yours I will pay attention, for in point of fact, that relation is primeval, suffering knowledge. And on the dry soil, they hunted for water to start. I see it floating, a collective place of fact and language. When we reach for it, it is their prime faces telling. I could hold the thought all the way into the house. Under the almond trees, it did not break into the spilling out of all that was contained, carrying huge armloads of flowers into the house. By himself, he was able to watch the turning of language I have lost. You follow me, or incidentally, a voice under the house talks of the house as life, delving into the divide between the echo of the voice and the voice. This day has its own confidence. I have learned to take the culmination. Going with the stream will give the desired effect. So much for that attention. The fields blue, the cities red, and the buildings according to pleasure. But he only had cheese, for they were not kind to him. But it was not error, though the exactness was not of nature, and renders the futility of invention to the last to stay poor. His mind found a way to a pinpoint, concerned exactly with preoccupation and the graciousness of this extension in the sun, anxious not to press to the backside to break open his own indifference, pacing for hope, let me leap to a country that shucks aside the diddles of an old heritage of blood for what the country makes as it goes along, fresh in its old history, settling before we leave it, barely discovered. Not for me, it's not over. If they get to be goblins from the late life resurrected at any point, passion is not necessary in the unaccompanied gnawing of limbs, foliage, indeed, indeed. Am I to take your composite and equally multiple deaths quite seriously? What was it now? The continuous static electricity of the dead impinging upon those not quite free from that circulation, and again arrive at the heart with help from the east. In time, I am permitted little indifference to the snotty gnawing that continues to ignore the Lulu land. Having ravished and scarred what was given them, turn back again to turn over the pawings, finding the occasional bright piece of glass not stuck in that already endless French mosaic called stomach, was to rechoose the power. And in turn, the figure never appears, but drives itself away, and the pacing to call up the center of the house doesn't exist. As things starts to run out, one wants to leave the message alone for no reason other than the final stab was a closed way, self-imposed, if not self-styled by one who had such. I have little illusion we are to fall off, washed over by the increasingly obvious waves. It's no lake any longer, now you've chosen. And that's enough of that series. Those are sort of funny. I really think those poems as being just trying to make a language inside a language, sort of. I mean, for me, I can follow those to certain points, and I lose them, and I pick them up again. And they're funny poems for me. So I read you three of those. I, nevertheless, she, I, he, built a garden. She could go in if she wished. Really, the sky was above, which I saw nothing else outside, wrapped in blankets. Well, kids, I was fooled by the story. Nonetheless, cause at this time, nothing is dying, even the man who makes it at all. Another for the rising, the poor crocus rolled under their feet, dust leashed in the garden, it moves lightly under the surface. Meandering, the trees rustle in the street, pools. Hence descriptions out in little glass boxes, for people want to sing. It has to do with trees. Sap naturally being doubly renewed is doubly removed. Ah, you words are great ticklers. And you tooting away, I see real sparkle as my own prerogative naturally. Ah, hell, that isn't what I wanted to say. I didn't want to say anything derived from reason, glory, and splendor. I was thinking of shrimp over noodles. I wished to allow great, unimpeded grandeur like a rising storm to take over and do the dishwashing. They are in a great frenzy now, lashing about in the thick of it. We must not get confused with a message as that comes by telegram. Oh, no. No, in this swift little battle, the adroitness, the belief, the lightness, able to rise so quickly above dull armor, that's what we need, springing the A's and E's loose into the sky like garlands to fall back down and shower us. From this moment, and hence backwards, a visitation echoes through the apparent opening to the tomb. The narrow passage is the mind's reasoning in clarity as she moves like a shadow. Having lived her life before, it is now the particular graces that surface, running amidst that is not lighter than spring. Water is revealed as the female opens out to receive her own death, which is her own eternal youth, her own love of herself. The last thing I'll read is Descartes and the splendor of a real drama of everyday life in six parts. Part one. We are now on an adventure of rightly applying our vigorous minds to the straight road, applying our reason and sense. I shall thus delineate my life as in a picture, so that I may describe the way in which I have endeavored to conduct my own design and thoughts in six parts. I am not up to subject myself to censure. You may note the grand design of Yosemite is without flaw, being a natural occurrence. Thusly, my own natural inherited mind has been such, looming above me in magnificence, at times leaving me far behind. In short, grandiose above believability, and in short again, and irritant. Not being a devotee of the single mind, however, the rapt contemplation of a pebble and revealing the universal cosmos, I took my lagging acceptance of my natural magnificence of heritage as being due to the ignorance and unfamiliarity of my native country. When it's winter in the corn country, people don't stop eating corn. So I traveled a great deal. I met George, Ebba, Joy, Philip, Jack, Robert, Dora, Harry, Jerome, Ed, Mike, Tom, Bill, Harvey, Sheila, Irene, John, Michael, Mertis, Jaffu, Jay, Jim, Annie, Kirby, Alan, Peter, Charles, Drummond, Cassandra, Pamela, Marilyn, Lewis, Ted, Clayton, Sid, Barbara, Ron, Richard, Tony, Paul, Ann, Russell, Larry, Link, Anthony, Martin, Don, Fatso, Clark, Anya, Les, Sue, and Brian. This being some trip, and the possibilities seeming endless, and the faculties for entertaining and being thus entertained limited, I quit this and resolved to make my own self an object of study. Part two. I decided to sweep away everything in my mind and start over again, not adding one little iota until I was absolutely sure of it. I contemplate the reformation of my own opinions and will base them on a foundation wholly my own. It is impossible to trust anyone else. Walking alone in the dark, I resolve to proceed slowly. First of all, I'm not going to accept anything as true unless I'm sure of it. Second, I divide all difficulties into as many parts as possible. And third, I will go from the easiest to the hardest, in that order. And last, be sure I forget nothing. I thereby exercise my reason with the greatest absolute perfection attainable by me. Part three. So my reason may have a place to reside, I thus build myself temporarily a small house of commonly felt rules, a provisory code of morals, until I arrive at the grand castle of my purely executed reason. I will obey the laws and customs of the country, choosing the middle way for convenience, for excess is usually vicious, and nothing on earth is wholly superior to change. Thusly, extremes are prone to topple more. Be as firm and resolute in action as able. Once a choice is made, hold to it, thus alleviating pangs of remorse and repenting. Always conquer myself rather than fortune, and change my own desires rather than the order of the world. For accepting our own thoughts, nothing is absolutely in our power. We shall not desire bodies as incorruptible as diamonds, but make a virtue of necessity in our span of time. All that is necessary to right action is right judgment. And having furnished my cottage, I begin the establishment of my castle. Part four. I reject as absolutely false all opinion in which I have the least doubt. As our senses often deceive us, I assume they show us illusion and must reject them. As reason is subject to error, and who can offer more living proof of that than I must reject the faculty of reason. Finally, I am aware that I am only completely and confidently aware of all this rejection and doubt. This is all I can be sure of, this spinning out of my head. Hence, I arrive at my first fundamental truth. I think, hence I am. Or I doubt, hence I am. Or I spin, hence I am. Or I reject, hence I am. You get the picture. However, this I is of the mind and wholly distinct from the body. But then further clear reasoning brings me to this. In order to think, it is necessary to exist. I never saw a dead man think. I never hope to see one, but I can tell you anyhow, I'd rather see them be one. Dead men don't think. And therefore, everything we exactly and truly know, like the reasoning above, is because it is clear and distinct. I realize that to doubt is a drag, and a perfect being would accept everything. But from whence did I get my idea of perfection? Placed in me by a nature which can encompass my imperfection. Placed in me by a nature, reality, more perfect than mine, and which even possesses within itself all the properties of which I could form any idea. That is to say, in a single word, Mother God. with this idea of the perfection of Mother God, we should not exist. Imagination is a mode of thinking limited to material objects. And a stuffy mind assumes if you cannot imagine something, it does not exist, which is beside the point and not the argument, if not completely irrelevant to this text by which I am falling myself in glory and splendor. Am I a butterfly dreaming of me, or me dreaming I am a butterfly? Or am I Mother God in glory and splendor? Our ideas become confused because we are not wholly perfect, and our razor-sharp reason must be wielded at all times to guard against error. Error of imagination and error of the senses. Part 5. The action by which she sustains creation is the same as that by which she originally created. As I move through language and transfer the delicacy of vision into the moving and spoken word, so all thought not transferred on that level is lost and degenerated. The animal, the brute, dies a clumsy death, for he is not equal to God's working in man. If they do not speak the language of man, they speak no language and are destitute of reason. That the soul which we possess and which constitutes our difference, our soul which is language of Mother God, will not die with our bodies like the brutes, the animals which have nothing but their bodies to leave. We find the soul, our language, our reason, our Mother God, immortal. Part 6, the difficulties of trusting and using your own mind. The eye that is the pivot must not wobble in the name of the established compendium of minds. Mother God has created all, and I found this from my own mind, from whence reside the germs of all truth. And from her, the first cause, comes the sun and the moon and the stars, earth, water, air, fire, minerals, porridge, and from here I may examine all the objects brought to my senses, and all the results which I have deemed important I have brought to you, not for my private use, but for any value they may have to those after me, for our cares ought to extend beyond the present. But it is the proof of my own mind's abilities, any one mind's abilities, that my undertaking draws to proof. One cannot so well learn a thing when it has been learned from another as when one has discovered it himself. Mother God in the castle of heaven.